You see that today that Wayne Knight got accused of being dead and then turns out not?
Who's Wayne Knight?
Guy, Newman.
Newman?
Jurassic also Park?
Fat dude from Jurassic Park.
Oh, okay.
You didn't say the magic word. Indestructible Art. I'm Omar DeArmas. Joining me today is Evan Campbell.
Hi.
Ryan Adams.
I am Ryan Adams.
Spencer Carney.
I'm not Ryan Adams. So I got a story to relay to you dudes and dudettes out there. The other night I was out and about. I was frequenting the local watering holes. And
wait, you?
Yeah.
That's a little weird. A little weird.
It is a little weird if you actually knew my life these days. Don't get out as much as I used to. Start talking to some dude who gave me a little inside scoop on the next Avengers film.
Hmm. Oh. Oh.
Spencer Carney, man connected to the industry, always has like the inside scoop on...
Thumb on the pulse.
Well, some of the things he told me. Hulk is still there, but not as much as maybe in the first film, based on the fact, money.
Oh, money.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of money they're pouring into Ultron and Vision. A lot of money being poured into Vision.
So they just don't have the money to spend on CG Hulk?
That's the impression I got. Like, he's in there, but they kind of are cutting things in order because, you know, budget.
But does that mean that Mark Ruffalo will be around more often, but not just not as the Hulk?
I didn't ask that question.
These are the questions you should have been asking.
Well, I've always been an Edward Norton fan, and so Mark Ruffalo is the fake Hulk, if you ask me.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm always angry. Yeah. Whatever, man.
Death to fake Hulks.
Yeah. And I asked him about Ultron, and he said, it pays homage to the classic character. Now, is this going to be like a liquid metal thing? And he's like, no. So that's my inside scoop.
Well, that's cool.
Wow.
At least you were talking to a dude who knew his stuff, I guess, about, like, not just the film industry, but classic comics.
Yeah, well, he was an artist working on the film.
Okay.
So he was, and then we had a conversation about who would win in a fight between Hulk and Wolverine.
Okay.
And? Well, I don't think you can take out the Hulk. Hulk just gets stronger. He just wants to be left alone.
If it's like, if it's cinematic Wolverine versus cinematic Hulk, like, I'd give it to the movie Hulk, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, cinematic Wolverine's kind of a wuss. I like Hugh Jackman, man, but he's, you know.
I don't think it's Hugh Jackman's fault. I think it's just the way he's written.
I think it's Fox, man.
So you think that the comic book Wolverine could take out the Hulk?
Well, I mean, they've, you know.
Savage Wolverine, like, the first issue or something, don't they fight? And Wolverine, like, stabs a Hulk through the brain, and he doesn't die?
Well, they fought a few times in the comics, and sometimes Hulk wins, sometimes Wolverine wins. It just depends on who's writing them, what the character, you know, what the story calls for. Sometimes Wolverine gets ripped in half. And then you wait 4 years for the story to finish.
Yeah, Ultimate Hulk, or Wolverine versus Ultimate Hulk or whatever.
Yes.
That was, with the guy from, wasn't J.J. Abrams?
Lost. It was the other guy.
Damien Lindelof.
Yes, the guy that Hollywood calls in when they want
the ending of the whatever to suck.
Yeah. Like, you know what? The ending of this movie doesn't suck enough. Call in the dude from Lost. Let's make sure this movie totally blows. You see that Prometheus? Oh, man. Prometheus, that movie was a shitstorm, guys.
Never saw it.
Could have been good, man. Prequel to the first Alien movie?
Yeah.
And then the ending just goes
really hyped about it.
Sucked. Ridley Scott. What's his name? Idris Elba? Hottest man in Hollywood?
Mm-hmm. Charlize Theron?
Yeah.
She's a babe.
And you had some other people, but enough about them. That Prometheus movie. That was the worst.
Real tanker, huh?
Thanks, dude, from Lost. Go screw something else up. gotta take 4 years to finish up a three issue arc. Come on, man.
I'm confused. Yeah. The story went on for 4 years, or he just didn't finish for 4 years? Like, he just put it on hiatus for 4 years?
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. There's all this big hype of him writing a comic.
Did they say that supposedly it was ghostwritten at the end?
That's one of the rumors I heard, yes.
Well, at what point do they just take it away and be like, hey, dumbass, you're not going to finish this, we're going to finish it for you?
I don't know.
They don't. They didn't.
They don't.
You know, it was just like this little miniseries, like, hey, here's what happened when Ultimate Hulk fights Ultimate Wolverine. And Ultimate Hulk rips Wolverine in half. And Francis Linnell Yu did the art. And then it just disappeared. It just disappeared. And all of a sudden it finally came back. And I mean, I don't know. What else you got to do? What else? They just fight each other. And you basically, since it's the Ultimate Comics, you just kind of go a little bit more intense than you do in the normal comic. And then you finish it.
Like, yeah. Yeah, like Hulk basically rips Wolverine in half. Literally rips him in half. And then like he throws like the legs like 20 miles one way, and then I throw Wolverine's torso like another like 50 miles another direction, and it's like Wolverine crawling to get to his legs.
What? So what happens? Does Wolverine end up growing new legs, or do new legs or old legs grow a new Wolverine?
I think if I remember correctly, he does like the ultimate walk of shame. Like he crawls, he gets his legs, and like he kind of like bonds back with his legs.
And nobody finds him. He just crawls.
This is like the forest.
Yeah, it's like in the, you know, the wilderness. It's all snowy.
Some polar bear doesn't come up and just eat his legs.
Nah, it's Wolverine, dog. Wolverine kills polar bears. Read that origin?
I did.
Killed that polar bear. Woo! That was brutal.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Going back to this, your friend on the street here, Spence.
Uh-huh.
You would think with the amount of money that Avengers brought in that they would still, you know, their budget would be maxed out. Like they like Disney would be like, "What? Here's a Brinks truck. Do whatever you want.
Whatever you need. Whatever you need, you do it." Especially since like the Hulk was like the standout. Everyone loved that character from that movie, right?
True, but this is also, from my understanding, is you know you have a character like Vision, and there's a lot of things he's doing in this film, and he's the new character, and so you want to sell that guy, and you have to make decisions. You got to make decisions, and you say, you know what, Hulk. We just will downplay his character and upplay these new characters like Ultron and Vision. And I guess maybe whatever Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, maybe they're in it too. The guy was real vague. He kept citing things like NDA. I kept buying him beers, hoping he would like loosen up. It was kind of a tough sell. I got what I got, guys. I'm sorry. I have no answers.
I don't know. You did pretty good, man. But what I wonder is Hulk is so beloved, and I feel like when he does have another movie, it's going to be hard for them to live up to, because the way that he works in Avengers, and I mean how awesome he is in Avengers, I don't think you can keep that up for 2 hours, like, or an hour and a half or whatever, however long a movie has to be.
You're exactly right, Evan. Kevin Feige, the guy who's kind of running all the Marvel films right now, you know, he even said like, hey, we love the Hulk, but it's really hard for this guy to be, you know, in a solo film. So he'll always kind of play, you know, he'll be part of a larger cast of characters. But yeah, he was a standout in Avengers, but we'll see. I don't think you can't cut Hulk out. I mean, Hulk was, you know.
He said there's definitely going to be some kick-ass Hulk scenes, just not as much. That was the impression I got from my buddy, my friend. I don't know. He's like, maybe next week and I'll go out and I'll run into him again and be like, come on, man.
What else you then get?
He'll be like, ah, it's Spencer. I'll just tell you everything. And then we reported here.
Yeah, now that you have that trust built,
yeah,
he'll tell you everything.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And then you can screw him and put it all on the internet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the best part was towards the end of the night, I went to the restroom and I came back out. And it was like, you know, last call.
And he was gone.
No, he was there. And I was like, oh, hey, what's up, man? And then he was like, yo, man, get out of here. And I was like, what? And he's like, get out of here. And then I looked and he was like eyeing this girl sitting at the bar. And he was hammered. He reminds me a lot of a good friend of ours, Big Matty H. That's why I took to him so well, because I was like, you remind me. Like, he was older. He's like Matt's age. And I was just like, he was wearing cargo shorts in a bar, like a cool hip bar in LA. I'm like, yeah, Matt would do that. He would totally rock some cargo shorts in here and be super hammered and then be like, peace out, bro. I'm going to hit on this girl. Like, and so that was the end of it. I just said, all right, man, time for me to go home.
Yeah, he was probably like, hey, man, stop talking to me about this dork stuff. Trying to get laid right now, dude. Who cares about Hulk?
It was just funny because he was completely hammered and the girl was quite attractive and not as hammered. And, you know, anytime there's a girl sitting at the bar towards closing by herself, she's usually waiting for the cool dude behind the bar to get off work so they can go, like, you know, party.
Play checkers.
Yeah.
Eat pizza.
Eat some pizza.
Do some coke.
So, hey, if in 2015 these things all come true, called it.
And if bold not, prediction. No one's going to hear about it anyway.
Yeah, we're going to forget.
No way, man. We got to pass. We'll pass this on to Rich Johnston.
He'll report it for sure.
Why not? Reports everything else.
Yeah.
Gotta make that money, man.
Or no, dude.
Sell it for a high price.
Latino Review. They'll definitely Latino report Review. It. They'll report it. They'll be like, supposedly in the next Avengers film, Superman is gonna show up. Warner Brothers and Marvel Studios are doing a crossover. You heard it here first. They report stuff like that.
Yeah, and I totally believe it, too. Like, they're right. It's Latino Review.
Do they do video games as well or just comics?
They do, like, comic book films.
Oh, I see.
Didn't they say something at the end of the film? There was gonna at the end of Superman, there's gonna be a stinger where Superman flies down and has to pull Batman like out of retirement, and it's gonna be old what's his face, you know, American Psycho,
Christian Bale.
Like that was this whole thing they said, you know, like six months before that Batman or the Superman film came out, and they were like, "Bro, we are on it." And literally it was all based upon the fact that like Christopher Nolan took a meeting with somebody, you know?
Right.
Yeah, no, like, and what, well, to their credit was that was the plan that DC was trying to do. And from what I understand that Nolan and Bale, they bailed out the last moment.
They didn't want anything to do with it.
Christian Bale's like, yeah, I'm done with this character. This is, you know, I think they were offering him like Robert Downey Jr. kind of money. Like, but he was like, nah, I'm done.
I'm just going to go make American Hustle.
We're going to give it to Batfleck.
Batfleck.
I'm looking forward to Batfleck, guys. I want to see what he can do.
Yeah, I'm pumped too. This week has been kind of crazy for video games. It's getting harder for me to contain it. Both Dark Souls 2 and Titanfall came out in the same week, and we're all over it. Omar, you've been playing a ton of Titanfall. I've been playing a ton of Dark Souls 2.
I wouldn't call it a ton. I've been playing enough tonight.
Omar, you've been playing enough Titanfall. I've been playing enough Dark Souls 2. And I'm pretty pumped on both of those games. But Omar, tell me. Should we believe the hype?
Titanfall's a lot of fun. I'm wicked, wicked bad at the game, and it's still fun for me, so I think it's a good game. I got my Titanfall bundled Xbox on Tuesday.
Right.
And then was not able to sign on to Xbox Live for the entire day.
Wait, what? Is that because of the weird maintenance stuff, or what happened?
I think Xbox Live got hammered. And, you know, Titanfall is, I think, one of the first games that is all Azure. So it's like everything is running on Microsoft servers.
Right.
So I think they just, it was launch day hiccups or whatever, and the whole thing fell apart. But Microsoft came out and said it's not a Titanfall issue, but, I mean, clearly it had to have been, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, or, like, it's not a Titanfall issue, it's like a server issue that is indirectly influenced by all the people
trying to get on to Titanfall. So yeah, like I could not sign on to Xbox Live, so I couldn't do anything with my console for the entire first day.
Sounds like a problem I had with HBO Go in the series finale of True Detective.
I actually want to talk about that before we close out today, that True Detective stuff. I wasn't stoked on that ending. I don't know if you guys were.
You can go to hell. The ending was awesome.
Yeah, we should totally talk about that.
But yeah, so Titanfall is super rad. So like I said before, 6-on-6, I actually really dig it. There is a lot going on in the game, but you are always kind of like in it. You're not just hiding. There's no way to like get away from the action and stuff. It's just, it's really hard and really fast. And I think the people who are Call of Duty crazy are totally killing it in that game already.
Yeah, they're definitely excelling, yeah.
Yeah, like
frequently getting shot in the back all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely the same skill set, and they're, you know, taking advantage of having all of that previous practice in. But it's still pretty fun.
Yep. I've been playing a ton of Dark Souls 2, and it's everything you would expect from a Dark Souls game. It's fantastic. Level design is top notch. The game looks a lot better than the other two in the series, and I'm just trudging along, man. Killing some bosses. And
how long is a game like that? Because it seems like every step is like methodical, you know, like you have to think about everything.
Well, I mean, there's definitely different ways to play, and you could kind of go through a little more brashly to, because you kind of just count on dying, right? Like if you just count on, oh, I'm going to lose all these souls, then there's times when you could be a little more serious about collecting souls or just knowing like, okay, I need to figure this area out. So if I die, I don't really care. I'm just not going to like worry too much about collecting a bunch of souls.
But if you kill those guys, they don't come back, right?
No, they do come back when you... So there's these things called bonfires. So the premise of Dark Souls is essentially this. You're kind of traveling around trying to reach your ultimate goal, which I guess in this game is to find the king of this kind of crazy land where souls, like dead people, are trapped, because you don't really die. You just become undead, and then you could run around. And essentially, the goal is to collect all these souls and probably kill the king of the land. I'm doing the lore like a really big injustice, but essentially that's the way the game works. And the more souls you collect, that's how you level up. Like usually in an RPG or something, you just kill enemies, and you get experience every time, no matter what. But in this game, you have to hold on to your souls. If you die once, you have to go and find your bloodstain, like where you died, and touch it to get all your souls back.
And you get 100% back?
You get 100% back, but if you die again, you lose 100%. You lose them all. So that's why you have to be methodical in that game.
Die before you retrieve them is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. So like in WoW or EverQuest terms, you get one corpse run, but if you die on that corpse run, you're done. You just have nothing. And in this game, it's really cool too. It's kind of gnarly. Is every time you die without being human, like without restoring your humanity, you actually lose more of your max health until you restore your humanity. I don't know if that makes sense. But essentially, the more you die, the smaller like your life bar actually gets. The amount of life that your life bar can actually hold gets less. So it just gets harder and harder. So that might like keep you from like trying to grind or just like amassing large amounts of souls if you keep dying a lot without restoring your humanity. That game's awesome. The way that the level design works is just incredible. I mean, it's unlike a lot of games that are out there where you're progressing through areas and then they kind of link back to each other in a really simple way, where it's like, oh, you get through like all this really hard area and then you blow up this wall and you're kind of like back towards the beginning or something. And like the way the open world works, it's like a little more linear in terms of like you actually feel like you're going somewhere. Like you go from one place to another and there's actual areas in the world where you travel to, and the way that you get to each one is like by traveling through this fog, and then there's all these bonfires, and you can fast travel through the bonfires, but just the world that is built there for you to play in and try and survive in is just, it's top notch, man. I don't think there's anything that can really come close to what they're doing there with that stuff. So yeah, man, that game is really good. Dark Souls 2 is a ton of fun. You guys have any questions about it?
I have a question about how the leveling mechanic works, because like, so you collect those souls and then you have to go to someone to spend the souls to level your character?
Yeah, so there's a character in a town, which is kind of crazy because you could totally not see that character and not talk to them. And
yeah, so that's the thing. Like this game, everyone keeps talking about how this game is more approachable than the other ones, but if you've never played a Dark Souls game or Demon Souls, it's not approachable in the slightest because there's lots of things you could just not see. And they're like key members of like the game.
Yeah, but if you... Like if you play the game, you'll kind of understand it. Like it is approachable. It because you just play and the game naturally encourages you to seek things out and find things and try and figure things out because it is so difficult. It's like you come across a problem and you want to solve it. It's kind of the mentality, I feel like. And you'll just keep working on different ways until you solve it. And so eventually you will find that stuff. And I think a good part of that game is the social aspect. There's a lot of messages and stuff that people can leave for you on the ground. And if you read them, they'll help you out a lot. So like the community is there and it will help you kind of progress. But yeah, like in terms of it not being accessible, I think it's only not accessible if you just give up. Like if you just stop trying, then it's not accessible. But if you just try a little bit, you'll go a long way. But yeah, I like that game. It's fun. I will keep playing the heck out of it.
How are the controls, Evan?
The controls are very, very particular. They are set up to be a very certain way because every item that you use, like weapons and stuff in the game, work differently. They have different animations for a very specific reason. And the way that they keep you from like mashing a button, say like in Castlevania Lords of Shadow, you can kind of mash on your combos and it feels really, really good to kind of just like hammer on enemies and stuff. But this isn't that type of game. They want you to be really methodical and they want every fight to feel like an actual fight where you're not just going to go crazy and get sloppy because you would just probably get stabbed. So you have a stamina bar, and when that stamina runs out, you kind of like run out of energy. You will like get stunned, or if you have a shield, let's say, and somebody hits you, your stamina goes down. And if your stamina goes all the way down, then you'll be opened up for an attack. So it's not like you could just hold block forever and be invincible, you know? And it also, the specific animation sets for each weapon makes it interesting to like try and match up like dual-handed builds or you know, well, I'm gonna try this dagger and this shield or like a spear, or I'm gonna hold I don't know, two short swords or something, to maximize like the amount of times I can attack, and then just worry about dodging and stuff. And like the more equipment you have, like the heavier or the more equipment that you wear, like the heavier you are, the slower you'll move. So there's just a lot of very intricate things. I think the gameplay, it takes a little bit of getting used to if you're not used to like that kind of a game. It almost reminds me a little bit more of like Zelda Ocarina of Time. You know how you would like lock onto stuff and then you'd kind of have to wait for enemies to open up before you could attack them? It's a lot like that. And but you know, to the extreme and a little more complex. But it feels really, really good when you figure out all those mechanics or you find a weapon that you really like to use, and then you could just decimate dudes with it. But, you know, it goes both ways, because if you make a mistake, you know, some enemies will kill you that you don't expect, because if they just open you up in the right way, it's over, you know? So, yeah, the game's great. If you're feeling brave, you guys should check it out.
Wasn't a fan of the first one.
Yeah, I know you say that, but I know
that... I tried. I'm not going to talk bad about it. I just wasn't a fan. That's all, Evan.
Yeah. You know, and that's totally cool, man. That's like... it is definitely one of those games where it seems like either people hate it or love it. And one thing is for sure, though, the franchise, like Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, Dark Souls 2, will be affecting video games to come for a long time, because they're doing a lot of really rad things in those games that just need to be learned by other game developers. Just in terms of like just level design or continuity or whatever. For example, I was playing in Lords of Shadow, right? Because we've both been playing that game, Ryan.
Yes.
That game has like 100 things you could learn from Dark Souls. There's you're fighting on that train area, and in that game, you cannot jump down from a train car down to the next train car. Like, it's just right below you. It's right there. You could see it. If there's an invisible wall there that keeps you from jumping down, you actually have to like walk backwards, climb down a ladder, then again walk away from your objective, like come back. You know, and it's just like everything is very, very poorly telegraphed. Whereas in Dark Souls, it never really feels like that. You kind of just go and go and go, and then you're like, oh, this is awesome. This path just goes right back to here, and now like I've opened this locked door. Kind of like in Resident Evil, when you open a locked door from the other side, and you're like, okay, now I can get to this area way faster, right, and I don't have to go through all that other stuff. So, yeah, there's just a lot of really, really good design within that game, which I think will be affecting a lot of games from now until like the next 10 years or so.
That's cool.
You already see it in indie games. Like, you already see every Kickstarter game. It says like Dark Souls influence, Dark Souls influence, Demon Souls influence. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm pumped.
Did you see how the highest gamer score holder hit 1 million gamer score with Titanfall the other day?
Yeah, I saw that. People were saying like, oh, what happens if he gets like the wrong achievement and then he doesn't get, what is it, that number perfectly?
Yeah, he landed on 1 million exactly.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, he was streaming the whole thing, but the last bit of it, he was making sure that he counted every gamer point to make sure that he only got exactly what he needed, and then used Titanfall to push him over to exactly 1 million.
Smart dude.
What would you do if you had that? Would you stop that gamer tag? Would you just retire the gamer tag at 1 million?
That it's that perfect, the perfect million?
Yeah, it's the perfect million. I think I would not use that gamer tag anymore.
I don't know, but for a dude like that to actually have that many, could he resist? Could he resist from like climbing the ladder, you know? It's not like, Xbox Live is over.
Yeah, but no one's going to catch him.
But he could have 2 million.
Could he? To double it? I mean, he could go more, but like, it's a perfect million. I don't think I could go anymore. I guess he used like, because he was at the Xbox One launch, they presented him with the white Xbox.
Uh-huh.
If you remember that, he was on the camera. There was a whole thing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he was playing his regular, I guess, retail copy. I don't know why you would buy a retail one as well, but he was using his regular one, and then he plugged in the white one to get the 1 million score.
Oh, that's kind of rad. When he got it, he's probably like, I'm going to use this for something special. And then,
yeah,
that's cool.
And he said he's never going to use that Xbox again, but I would go the next step and never use that gamer tag again. Retired at 1 million. I just can't believe that somebody's collected that many gamer points or whatever gamer score.
Yeah, and it's weird because I know there's some people who just hack them, but yeah, that's cool. Those guys are crazy.
1 million, dude. So many points.
Spending a lot of times on that game, facts.
That's a whole lot of time, man.
Yeah. That is a whole lot of time. That's a whole. this is the thing, like, when you look back at, like, high school and stuff, I can barely comprehend how much time I used to have for everything when you don't have to work. Like, going to school, yeah, but, like, you had time to hang out with people, play games, like, I played sports, so I had, like, 5 hours a day to stay in shape and do this other stuff. Like, all of these things do not feel like they add up to a 24-hour day anymore. But, yeah, how do you have that much time to do, to, you know, to work on a million points gamer score and, you know, survive?
Yeah, I think he just, you know, wait, sets this, the time aside for
does
it.
Does this guy have a job?
Maybe he just streams.
I'm assuming he does, because yeah. He probably, like, needs to pay to live and eat and stuff.
And buy right. all those games that he's getting gamer scores on. Well, I'm sure Gamefly.
I'm sure he gets a ton of free stuff, but
is he in a relationship, you think?
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, I'm not going to make assumptions that the guy, you know.
Well, I'm just saying, if you devote that much time to playing games, man, it's kind of hard to, you know, devote any time to anybody else.
Well, that's true of anything. Like, if you're a professional clarinet player or something, you got to practice that thing like 4 or 5 hours a day. Like,
you don't have time for love, man.
Yeah, you don't got the time for love.
That's the problem with playing the clarinet, man.
Clarinets before hoes.
Wow, Omar.
Or bros.
Yeah. Good for that guy. 1,000,000 points, man.
It's kind of unbelievable.
That's crazy. That's cool, man. I'll hang out with that dude. I'll buy him a beer. If you're ever in the Nard, bro, come on now, man. Go to the Yard House. Get you a beer.
Get some of those vegan orange chicken wings or whatever they are. Orange chickens.
The buffalo chicken wings.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Have you had those, Evan?
I think it's just Gardein. Like, yeah, I think it's literally just...
Yeah, it's just Gardein. It's great that I have that option when I go to a bar.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
The world's really starting to come around. That I can go to a bar and have vegan appetizers. This world's not such a bad place after all, man.
You can do that in Oxnard? There's bars in Oxnard that have vegan appetizers?
Yeah. Like, you know about that. Oh, because it's not L.A., buddy? Oh. Yeah, we do things a little bit differently here in Ventura County, okay?
Welcome to, like, 2005. That's right. Shut up. Don't say
that. In my face.
It's super strange because that Yard House place is like a sports bar. It's gnarly. It's like a nicer TGIF.
Don't you know Ryan's a jock now? Mm-hmm. Going into comic shops, calling everybody nerds, watching the Doyers and the Lickers and, like, you know, not playing video games or reading comics, like, attacking his people openly,
just hanging out the
just
Yard
because
House.
They're different than him.
Yeah. What? Also, you're also forgetting I played high school sports too. Played water polo.
Yeah, you were like a shaka bra.
I'm just serious, man. Every time I go to the comic store, man, bad dudes just in my way. I'm like, come on, guy, go do some sit-ups. Damn.
You should start like a weekly comic book / walk club. Take everybody out on walks and then read comic books after.
That'd be actually a pretty good idea. Like almost like a comic book fit club.
Yeah, there you go. That's everybody, a good idea. You start on one end of town every Wednesday and, you know, walk to go pick up your pole. Did anything else happen in comics?
Well, you know, Marvel Comics is pretty cool, guys. I'm not sure if you know about this. Like, they're hip, edgy. They're so rad that they decided that they were going to go down to the big South by Southwest Festival.
Yeah,
I'm talking about. Yeah. Right? Because it's, you know, it's not just about music anymore, Evan. I'm not sure if you know that.
Yeah.
Interactive media.
Yeah, video games came out of that stuff too. Like, some video game news came out of that thing. I don't remember what the stories were, but...
I guess they keep the video game section of South by Southwest, like, totally segregated from, like, the music or movie section.
That makes sense.
Like it's on the other side of a river or something. Like you have to actively seek out the video game section. They totally keep everybody apart.
This thing makes us a ton of money, but you guys got to stay over there.
No one wants to see you.
It's the separation of nerd and state, guys. Keep those kids out of here. But yeah, Marvel showed up at the Geek Stage to kind of show off their new Marvel app, basically tying all their digital services into one application. The big thing that I saw in this app was Marvel using adaptive audio on their digital comic book application or app.
What does that mean? Like Siri will read the comics to me?
No, it's like they have like soundtracks and sound effects, and the soundtrack changes as you're swiping through the panels.
I feel like we've been down this road before.
It was interesting. I guess Marvel hired some big-time Hollywood composer to do the first story that I think it's... issue of Captain America coming out. It seemed cool, but I could imagine that, you know, hiring a big composer to go and do this adaptive, you know, music score for your comic book. I couldn't imagine them doing that for all the books. And if they did, I could see the quality probably dipping after some time. It was definitely weird. I don't know how I feel about having, a soundtrack and punch noises as Captain America, like, jumps through the door and, like, you hear, like, a door open. Like, there's, like, a punch sound. There's no necessarily, like, vocal work being done. There's no, you know, character speaking. But it's just, you know, sound effects and a soundtrack. It's a bit weird. But, like, this is kind of the future of comics, guys. This is where we're going.
They announced this a year ago. And then this is them finally being like, hey, remember that thing we announced? Well, we fired the guys doing it, and now we have these guys doing it, and here's where we're at. Everything's going to be tied, like they're doing with the Winter Soldier Captain America story, since the movie's coming out this summer. So there's a big push for that. And the guys are very clearly like, we're going to see how this shakes out, because this may not be the future of comics. I'm not convinced it is. Come on. Like, do I really need sound effects? The sound effects are my head.
I feel like they didn't even focus test this. Like, has anybody actually sat down and made a prototype of this thing and then tested it?
I'm sure they have. Is this fun to read?
Like, is this good to watch? Are people even going to like this?
Yeah, I'm sure they are totally focus testing it.
How is this different from that Nova thing that they put out a while back? Didn't we already get something like this?
That was the Infinite Comics, where it was kind of like a motion comic. I don't think there was sound with that. No. Was there?
No, I kind of feel like I remember hearing like lightning or something, or not.
No, you were just reading it during the storm.
Okay.
So this app works really good. Just make sure it's raining when you read it.
I like that Marvel did put together all their digital services in one app, as opposed to having multiple Marvel apps. Just one.
Totally.
That's cool.
That what do they call it?
Marvel Now or. The service that gives you all the Marvel comics?
Yes. Not Marvel Infinity. What do they call that? Anyways, that's great. That's a good app. I haven't used it in a while, and I'm thinking about they have this promotion going right now for the month of March. You put in some code, and it's like 99 cents for the first month versus $9.99. And I want to go back, because the last time I remember using it, it was kind of janky. They would have this kind of the guided view that you see with the Comixology.
Right.
But the panels were all cropped really weird.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Depending on the quality of the images in there, too, really changes things.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes with guided view, it'll crop and focus on the art. And so maybe, like, the outsides will be, like, the outside areas will be kind of cut off. But this is where straight up, like, it's, like, mid-panel crop. Like, you see, it's, like, two panels in one cropped real bad. Like, one panel is there, and then it's, like, a little sliver of the next panel over. Like, that kind of cropping. But
do you think someone has to go through the actual, like, you know, whoever scans the comic in has to go in and tell it where to zoom in on stuff?
Or
is
it doing this
weird magic thing and sees the borders to panels or something?
Well, when I'm reading on Comixology, usually they will separate the panels. Like, it won't blow up because it won't decrease the screen resolution, because it does this trick where it just, like, it makes it a little bit bigger, you know, but it doesn't, like, blow it out to the full screen. So then they could do whatever shape they want, and then it just has, like, letterboxing, like, all, like, crazy letterboxing around the whole thing. So they kind of get it, like, as big as they can while, like, fitting inside the screen.
Yeah, and they also do a pretty good job of zooming out, where you'll kind of, like, show you the whole big picture and then zoom into the certain parts. Like, because there's a lot of spreads where there are no panels. It's, like, there'll be a character in the foreground, and then behind him are all the panels, and so there's no clean, you know, no automated system yet is going to be able to figure that out. Some intern somewhere who's like,
yeah, that seems like a lot of work.
Comics
or
whatever, man. This is stupid, you know.
I feel like these sound apps, or maybe less so, but the like all of these crazy apps that they keep trying to do for comic books are like the same type of deal as people getting streaming video games to work. And albeit, like, streaming video games is further on its way, I think, and it's a lot closer to happening than, like, trying to force a medium, you know, into, like, a different, like, trying to force how you interact with a particular medium a different way. Because obviously when you stream video games, you're still, like, playing it the same way you normally would. But I feel like the amount of tension that companies are giving to both of those things, like comic books, the amount of tension that comic book companies are putting into, like, these crazy app things, or particularly Marvel, and the amount of tension that everybody is putting into, like getting video games to a place where you could stream them over the internet is like the same amount. I feel like it's just going to happen eventually through tenacity of these companies like throwing money at these things.
Yeah, but streaming a video game over the internet is, you're just changing the distribution and kind of how you access
right.
it, but
right.
at the same time, it is still the same. Trying to take right. a comic book and turn it into this weird motion comic-y thing, or, I don't know, add sound effects, add sounds to it, that's
yeah.
not comics. That's not comics. And that's why these things ultimately fail. A couple years ago, Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev, who had a really great run on Daredevil and are just two dudes working together, very solid. Like, they did a Spider-Woman. And in addition to putting the comic out, they were like, they also made a motion comic. And so, and this was the process they kind of did at the same time. And so you have Alex Maleev, who's art directing the comic, at the same time also having to make decisions on how he art directs the comic so that it looks good in a motion comic.
Right.
And then there's people doing voices, and it was exactly how you expect. And I think he burnt out on it because it was such a huge job, and like the comic itself kind of sucked. Cause...
Yeah, and that's another thing, right? Like with comic books, you never know. I mean, I guess you kind of know, but when someone's writing a comic book, they don't know if it's going to suck or not. And, you know, you build all this infrastructure to have like sound effects, like a sound guy, do the sound effects and bring in music or whatever it is. But if the book is starting to suck and you still have to put all that much more effort into it before it gets canceled, I don't know, like how much time are you out wasting? Like how much money and time are you wasting on like a dead end book as the numbers kind of decline, you know?
I'm
like,
sure it's just
a bigger
like TV
investment,
or
right?
something, you know, it's like, you know, they pilot a TV. They make the first one. If it, people dig it, they make this the next five or whatever.
Okay. I wonder who's out there just saying like, man, I really want to read motion comics. Anybody?
Dude, there's a lot of people trying to do that. There's the Madefire app, which has a lot of British artists. I know Dave Gibbons was part of it. Liam Sharp, I think is his name. And we even talked about this way, 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 way back in the day when it first debuted. And it literally just was like, let's have the comic. It's a motion comic where like it shows this guy in the top panel, and then the next panel like expands, and there's some like sound effects, and the dude punches somebody, and maybe slides across the screen. It's like those old Captain America cartoons when like it was literally like him running was them just moving an animation cell across and taking pictures of it. Like there was no actual running movement; it was just him like sliding across the screen. And I would love for the day when it comes when something like motion comics actually works and becomes this new exciting thing that really does either enhances comics as they are or like supplements it. But I maybe I'm just an old guy. I've been reading comics for way too long. It's like it's 3D in movies. Like you
yeah.
do have to really have to see like, oh, hey, look, this character's in the foreground and that guy's in the background. I don't care myself. It's a fun novelty, but not something that I want to see every time when I watch a film. But they do it because people buy it. I just haven't seen that with motion comics, and I don't know if it'll ever get to that point.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
like
they're looking for the thing that, you know, the next thing that they can sell to people, like 3D, and you know, 3D was popular for a while. Do you have any ideas, like if motion comics are not the thing for people to you know sign up for? What would be the thing to make comics into a different media?
I don't think that's the goal, but I do have an idea like what they should do. Not to make comics into a different medium. I think
to expand upon it, to give people more variety. Like they're looking for something to mix it up, right? And
right.
maybe motion comics isn't the thing that, you know, they want it to be. But what
How
is
about,
that thing? Like
yeah,
what other ideas are there?
I think what they should do is focus on what they've got, like focus on the medium, focus on why people love comic books, and you get the people who make those comic books and you record them talking about each page as you go through it, and then you have like audio commentary for like rad books, you know, and you have like the artist and the writer sit down. I mean, that's not going to take that long for and the production cost is so minimal. Like you just
yeah,
put a microphone
just,
in
yeah,
front of
just
two guys
talking heads. You can
yeah.
do it on video, just a couple talking heads and stuff. Like at the end of, we talked about Two Detective a couple times already, like at the end of each one of those episodes they have the two writers in the, or the writer and like the whatever guy, the stage guy, they talked
right.
about like what happened at the, during the episode and what the theories and stuff behind it were.
Yeah.
It was super rad. It was like super insightful. They could totally do that for comic books. I just don't know how they deliver that. If it's a book that you're reading, you have to go searching for it, at least with TV. and like commentary tracks and stuff, it's part of the medium where it's like, in, you know, right. it's embedded in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you'd have to build it in.
Well, one
yeah.
thing they did announce at South By was a documentary. They're doing the documentary on the Civil War book that Mark Miller and Steve McNiven did. And that's an interesting way. That's kind of behind the scenes. So there are things like that. As for what you could do to change the medium, I don't know. If I knew a way to do that successfully, I would be working towards that and not hanging out with you guys.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I think
I mean,
what
like,
Omar...
everyone has ideas, yeah. right?
No, I don't right. know. Like, I think, I mean, the digital's, I think they there's a lot of missed opportunity, like we talked about last week in the episode, in terms of capitalizing on the fact that they are characters both on television and in the movies, representing characters in the comics, and there's no synergy. There's no, and that's always been the problem. As soon as these movies came out, like with X-Men, Spider-Man, it started being really, really successful, even Batman. Like, there's no easy way to transition a moviegoer, a casual moviegoer, into becoming a comic book fan, because it's just comics are so convoluted and
right. Well, they definitely would have a better shot, like you're talking about last week, if there was some kind of grand architect, whether that's like a committee of people who decide, like, this is what this character, what's happening with these characters. This is like across the board.
Well, you're talking, that's editorial like, right
and
there.
Films. Yeah, yeah. But so the problem is editorial in terms of comic books, it doesn't span to like the Hollywood aspect, right? Like,
no, what happens
so they would
is
need to have their. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was going to say what happens is usually you have there's publicity and PR that's over at either Marvel yeah. or DC or one of these big, you know, comic book companies, right? And they're basically right. dictating the editorial what they want to see in the books to create the synergy, but just something is off.
Right.
To be honest, for comics don't have to do a damn thing.
Yeah.
They really don't. That's what I love about the medium. What I'd love to see them, if they're embracing, you know, the technology side and the different apps, I've said it before and I'll say it again, you put together a $15 a month Netflix-type service for comics where I get unlimited, you know, DC or Marvel, whatever, you're going to get more readers and you'll be having people buy more stuff in print. I read an interesting article, and I'll find the link, about last year alone, more comic book stores open more than any other time in the last, like, 8 years. And a lot of it is these apps and the movies and the TV shows, right? But print is not dying. In fact, print is growing. And I know for me personally, if there was a Netflix service, say if DC just had their own or Marvel had their own, I would gladly pay $10. My pull list wouldn't shrink at all. In fact, it would probably expand because I would be trying out a lot of books that I'm currently not reading. And if I like them, I'd go buy the print versions because I'm a collector. And that's...
Yeah, that's why comics are such a unique thing, you know, because it is the physical medium of it, or the, you know, the physical books are such a special thing. And it doesn't exactly translate 100% over into digital. Like, yeah, you're getting the story and you're getting to see the pictures, but it's not the same. It, you know, there's like a way that when you have the book in your hand and you're feeling the pages and stuff, it is totally different.
Right. So I don't think, like I said, they can add sound effects and bells and whistles and cool swipes on the iPads and whatnot, motion, whatever. But at the end of the day, man, I just want to read a good story with some good art. And I
think it's way backwards, too, because the technology is going to change. Like, the way that we have iPads now and stuff in 10, 15 years might not be the same. Like, somebody might figure out a better way to access information, carry a screen around with you. And then what do you do? Like, you have all of that content, all of that stuff that they built based around, like, that hardware is not going to work anymore. And they're going to have to come up with something else. So I think that's kind of backwards too. And yeah, like we were saying before, just in terms of the business model and the way that they're handling digital distribution just seems like it could all really use some heavy tweaking.
I just want a future where they could just scan the comics directly into my brain. Just beam them up, man. Or have me reenact my comic books.
Or
all Oculus Rift style.
Yeah, Oculus Rift comic books. You're inside the comic.
Dude,
3D
so
models
rad.
Of the things happening going around.
Omar, let's work together on this. Let's start a Kickstarter.
This is where I make the obligatory statement, like, you're all just going to be the fat, lazy people in Wally.
Yeah, well,
no.
According
no, because
to Ryan, that's already
we
happening.
Hate, so. And we hate fat people, so it's not going to happen. We're not going to get fat.
When you guys said, I see two versions of this Oculus Rift thing. I see, like, the cool version where it's like, oh, you're inside the panel, like, and you can look around and it's in 3D space and everything, you know, is the way it is. But then I just see another version where it's you, like, with your digital hands just reading the comic book.
I see it as you're like you're in the panel and you're running for your life because, you know, you're in the either in between Wolverine and the Hulk fighting each other, You're about to get smashed in the face.
Now, could you imagine being not only just reading, you know, this awful Wolverine storyline that's going on that Ryan's been ranting and raving about, but being in it? Like, wouldn't that just even be even worse? I don't want to be like, I don't want to be part of that's just like ultimate television. Because once you're part of a TV show, if you're like there in Breaking Bad, like you've just given up on life. You've given up on life. I mean, people already have a hard enough time it is with television. I don't want, like, virtual reality immersion into it. I'm fighting that. That is wrong.
What the hell is wrong with you, man?
Television makes you all slaves. You're all just slaves to television. And if you're going to put this thing on and you're sitting there, like, you're going to have the Oculus Rift face. That's what that is. That's subversion. Subversion. That's the man telling you what to do.
Keeping you down, man.
Just sit there and just drool.
You sound like a goddamn caveman right now, dude. Evolve, bro.
Wait, man.
Oh, I don't like fire. Ooh, we eat my food raw. Sorry, dude.
Don't tell me that you sitting there like experiencing Breaking Bad in first person is like somehow you're in the future. Because like, oh, you're able to put yourself in the TV show.
That would be so awesome. Like, be like, yeah, man, check this out. Hey, there's blue meth. Omar, check this out. There's blue meth. It's right here. Told me about that.
Of course, that's the first place. I've read enough dystopian. I've read enough dystopian science fiction to know that it never ends well.
And you know what? You're gonna be one of the first people to die, man. Like when this dystopian future shows up, because you did not embrace our new overlords, man. That's your problem, Spencer. Dude. You'll be the first to die.
All you have to do is watch Surrogates a couple times. You know how to how to fight the man with the technology at hand and stuff. And then you're
I'm
going
to be all John Connor style, going back into the past to kill the guy who invented Oculus Rift to stop this horrible future from happening. That's what I'm going to do. That's how I'm going to survive the dystopian future. Killer machines coming after me. Banging my mom or my best friend's mom, some crazy stuff. I'm just like, whatever, man. I'm lost in time, saving the world, taking one for the team,
going back and becoming your own grandpa.
That's the weird thing about time travel is that could totally happen.
Yeah, it is a little strange.
Wait, it already happened. Don't you know? Flat circle, man. Everything's gonna happen's already happened. You know what it all comes down to, though, with this comic book stuff is, it's fairly obvious to the people that are into the medium. Like, the people creating comic books, and the good comic books, I'm not talking about all the other dredge stuff that comes out. It's like, these guys are awesome storytellers, and the medium they chose, comic books, is a great way to tell stories, you know? They can draw exactly what they want to see. There's no, physical limitation of what happens on the page. And the comic companies and the entertainment companies are trying to, trying to find a way to get these great storytellers to tell stories in other ways that they can make more money on. Mm-hmm. And it's just a shame. It's a shame that these people are getting sold out in that way. Cause they found the medium that works well with their style of storytelling. But at the same time, right. It would be awesome to have that good a storyteller be something in TV and, and have TV not just be total garbage all the time, but just have really good storytelling happen in there.
I feel like even if they just spent the amount of time and energy that they spend on trying to come up with these new crazy app ideas, just on finding a way to reach a market better, that's part of the problem right there, you know.
But that's what they think they are doing, right? They think they're reaching out to a newer market or a different market by making these different visual style things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely right, man.
I feel like they have a product and they're putting stickers on it and say yo, do you want it now? You want it now? Just sprucing it up, you know, doing weird bells and whistles type things instead of just .
Yeah, and I feel like they're giving they're giving the audience less credit than they deserve. They're assuming that people are either too lazy or too dumb to find comic books interesting, that they need some kind of weird something that's played at them and not they're not actively reading. And that's where the disconnect happens from what they should be doing and what they are doing, you know.
You want to know one of the most popular comics in the past year? That DC Gods Among Us Injustice comic. That is from a video game. And everybody in that comic is crazy. There's people, Superman is killing people and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. That's been pretty successful. The video game stuff has been really good. Not saying in terms of quality, but really good and engaging.
Engaging new readers, probably.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're tapping into an already kind of nerd market, so to speak, that is not afraid to, I don't know, like, not afraid to role play, so to speak. You know, there's a lot, it's power fantasies. When you're reading like a superhero comic, you're like, part of it is you're like, hey man, Spider-Man's cool because like I would love to be Spider-Man. That's why I read them. And same thing in video games. You can be Spider-Man in a video game.
Right. And yeah, it's like with the, I forget which Batman game it was, but it came with like a free comic of the series, whatever that they were writing. So, you know, like just finding ways to introduce that stuff. Like, hey, you're going to buy this game anyway. Here's the free book, you know, check it out. And, you know, it's up to them to make sure that the stuff that they're doing is good. Like make sure that that free book doesn't totally suck because then it would have the opposite effect. But, you know, there's just tons of different things I feel like they could be doing that's not trying to solve this incredibly complex problem of changing the medium to be this other thing that is totally not.
Comics.
Yeah. I guess the reason I brought up that parody between comic book companies trying to continually trying to make these crazy apps and things and video game companies trying to make video game streaming work is because Amazon just announced that they're going to have some type of video game streaming service. But they openly noted like, hey, you probably shouldn't play like first person shooters or fighting games with this thing. Cause it, you know, it's not going to work.
Yeah. It's not just games too. It's like apps as well. Like,
yeah.
And do you see their controller? The controller looks a lot like that OnLive controller that you got a long time ago, right?
Oh yeah.
Isn't it kind of almost exactly the same thing?
It's pretty close. Yeah.
It's weird that, you know, if anybody can make it work, I guess Amazon is the person to step into that or to try to take over that market. They already have the crazy data infrastructure with Amazon Web Services. Yeah. I wonder if they can, you know, if they have enough money to throw at the problem that OnLive did not.
And I feel like that's the thing. Like, that's the difference. With comic books, they probably will never solve that problem, right? They will probably never find an app or whatever, like bells and whistles that'll make more people want to read comics in the way that they're trying to do, because they're just losing their old audience even if they do end up gaining a new one. But for video games, I feel like the problem is technology and it's money, right? It's a problem that once you throw enough money on it, you know, you have enough server farms and fast enough connection, all of this stuff will work. So it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of time and money. And I don't know, like, so I feel like they're not going to give up on this because of things like Netflix and, you know, digital video streaming services. Like that stuff rakes in a ton of money. And
yeah, it's a totally different thing though. Like that's a one way connection, you know, like they're delivering something to your home.
Right.
In the streaming, the apps and games there's a two way connection, and I feel like it's a totally different market, you know,
in terms of the motivation for them to do that. Like the reason they want to do it is because they see things like Netflix. And they're like, look at like this digital distribution model where you could get like all of this profit, you know, and I'm not sure how expensive it would be to run all that stuff. But the motivation is there because of things like Netflix, I assume. And that's why they want to be able to deliver games in that way, because it solves some other sort of different monetary problem. And I think that's why companies are so interested in pushing that stuff, even though it doesn't work that good.
Yeah, well, Amazon definitely is known for throwing money at a thing and not really caring about whether or not it makes profit. Like, isn't Amazon, like, constantly not making profit as a company because they don't care? The guy doesn't care?
I don't know.
That's, like, one of the things about Amazon. And the reason that Amazon squishes so many other competitors is they really don't care about making a profit. They only care about, you know, furthering whatever thing they're working on.
Yeah, the end result. That makes sense. I think that's a legitimate way to go. But if you have the money to do it, it's like definitely a good way to make a better product.
Hey, Marvel's killing off Wolverine, guys. Sucks. Make it happen. Do it sooner. They've been
a little bummed on that, aren't you?
I'm sick of Wolverine. Sick of it. Hate it. Hate the book. I still read the damn thing. I picked up that Wolverine number three this week. That's the part I liked in it. They explain how he gets his new suit. I like that part. Everything else was garbage.
How do you get his new suit?
The Superior Spider-Man made it for him. Spock.
Why did he do that?
Oh, well, they hung out the issue before. Just talking about, you know.
Do you call him Spock? Spider-Rock?
Yeah, because it's Spider-Rock.
Spock.
Weird.
You just hate that book so much, Omar.
So much. So much.
Anyway,
so glad that What's-His-Name is coming back and they can just end all that garbage already.
Well, he's not going to go away because he's the Superior Spider-Man, dude. Anyways, yeah.
You know what this Wolverine stuff feels like to me? Like 3 months to die. It's like that scene in Austin Powers when a guy's going to get run over with a steamroller and he just doesn't move out of the way.
Totally, man.
It's like, it's kind of funny, but also really annoying. It's like, dude, just move. Just move out of the way.
Yeah.
Just get out of the way, bro.
Yeah. It's terrible, guys. It's terrible. But you know what? I just want to wait till this gets over. We'll relaunch Wolverine 6 months after he dies. He'll be cool again. That's why I'm a badass Wolverine, man. I don't want a Wolverine as a teacher anymore. I don't want him as an Avenger. That's why him just doing cool stuff, man. Not crying about being mortal. I don't know, man. It's been a really tough week, guys. I'm really sorry.
It's okay, man.
All the stuff at the comic book store.
I would ask you about your pick of the week, but I feel like it's just going to be more bitching.
No, actually, my pick of the week is it's going to be a surprise for you guys.
Wait, before we go to picks of the week, I have one more thing I want to talk about because it's actually really interesting.
Damn it, Omar!
You know what? I got one more thing. There is a Kickstarter happening for the sequel to Frog Fractions. Do you guys know what Frog Fractions is?
I thought that thing was old. This should be your pick of the week.
No, this just happened this week.
Oh, okay.
Frog Fractions is a game that was an online like Flash style game where on the surface it was a math, like, you know, teach kids math kind of thing, but then it quickly devolves into this crazy, crazy, crazy thing. So it's like one of the, you should, if you have time, you should go to Frog Fractions and play it online and just see the crazy evolution of what that game turns into. It's kind of like Candy Box and all those other games that on the surface look like one thing and are completely different once you get going.
Right.
But the guy who made that game has a Kickstarter out to put out the sequel to that game, but the whole premise is he's not going to tell anybody when the game comes out or what it's called. So you're giving him money, and he's making the sequel to Frog Fractions, which is whatever. It's not like a sequel to the game where it has a continuing storyline or anything. It's just his next game. And he's going to put it out stealth-like, and then once people start figuring out what it is, then he'll start releasing it like... You know, if you back it to get a copy of the game, if you figure out what the game is and you email him, say like, hey, here's your game. I totally found it. He'll send you a code to get it on Steam or whatever. But until it's like widely known what is going on with his next release, he's not going to tell anybody about it. There's not going to be any news stories, nothing. It's totally stealth. And I think that's super funny.
That is really funny. This guy's out of his head, and he made the first Frog Factions with probably no money at all.
Yeah, probably nothing.
I can't imagine what he's going to do with funds to spend.
Yeah, with money that he can actually spend time and not have to work at the same time. Also, the Kickstarter video is crazy. And there's already people like going through the Kickstarter video and finding like tiny things written on walls behind people in the video and trying to make that into like, you know, into clues of what the next game was. There's a whole like... conspiracy theory happening on the internet for this game already, and I think it's awesome. So you should go check out the Kickstarter for the Frog Fractions 2 and then like get involved in all the craziness that's going to be going down with that game. Like, who knows, maybe the game's already out and nobody knows it yet. You know, like, what if the Kickstarter is just like a get, you know, to get people on the trail, and then it's already there.
Yeah, what if the Kickstarter is for Frog Fractions 3 actually, and Frog Fractions 2 already exists?
Whatever is happening, this guy is a genius, and this is super funny. It's exactly the kind of stuff I want to see more of on the internet.
I think Frog Fractions is only like 30 minutes at the most. You should sit down and play it if you haven't.
All right, now I'm done. You guys can do whatever the heck you want for the rest of the thing.
Good job, Omar.
Yeah, actually having stuff to talk about. Amazing.
Wow. Thanks for contributing to the show. So what is your pick of the week, Omar?
My pick of the week is a game called Delver that's available on Steam and I guess on Android phones. I didn't even know until today. But it's early access, so it's still in development, but you can sign up for the beta program through Steam and get all the new things that are happening to it. It is a first-person roguelike dungeon crawler game. And it's all the art style in it is all like super chunky pixel art. It's really cool looking, but the first-person combat of it is really fun, and it's all roguelike, so once you die, you have to start all over. It's just a really fun game, and it seems like they're putting a lot of work into it, and it's got controller support and all that stuff, so it's all really cool, and it's like $8 or something to get in on the beta on there.
Oh, rad.
Yeah, Delver. It's really fun. It's a really cool game. Everyone should check it out.
Spencer, what's your pick of the week, man?
You know, actually, it was a pretty good week for comics. I did review, there's some number ones that came out from Marvel this week, which I randomly picked up and reviewed. You can read that over on the site, indestructibleart.com. My favorite of the three probably being Avengers Undercover, which is a really good issue. But that was not my pick. My pick was, I just randomly came across a link last night of a BBC special about Frank Quitely. It's called What Artists Do All Day? Hold on. It's called, What Do Artists Do All Day?
That's awesome.
And it's just him in his little studio in Glasgow and talking about his work. He was like in the middle of working on Jupiter's Legacy number 4, which I think came out last week and I read. And so it was very interesting to kind of see his process of going from like doing everything on like a Cintiq tablet, doing all his blue work, and then printing that out and kind of inking it, and just how he's this dude that kind of his studio is like nothing glamorous. It's the studio he shares with these other artists, and he's just kind of in the corner, and it's like not like this cool setup like you expect it would. It's just like, oh, I got a desk and I have a tablet on it and I do art. And it's like a 30-minute show. It's a little I wouldn't say slow, but a little understated. But it was just, I don't know, if you love Frank Quitely like I do, it's a very good watch just to kind of see how he does his thing. And he talks about his work on WE3, his work with Absolute Superman, work with, you know, Grant Morrison, and All-Star Superman. And yeah, it's on YouTube. Just look up What Do Artists Do All Day, Frank Quitely.
So is that a series of things?
It's a series. Like, there was another artist on there who was like a fine artist. It's like BBC4 puts it out. I know Bleeding Cool talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I just randomly watched it. That sounds rad. Yeah, if you're interested in the art, the artistic process, especially someone like Frank Quitely, who's a tour de force unto himself, I suggest watching it.
Dude, that's super cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's just crazy. He's watching him just draw, and he's just like, in his little tablet, and he's just like, talking about, and he's like, yeah, the scene here, and just him just, show him laying out. I'm like, I've totally read that page.
So he draws digitally? That's crazy to me, actually.
A lot of people do.
And it talks about how he's like going over the scripts, and he's kind of making little, as he's reading the script, he's making little small sketches kind of in the margins and stuff, and just talking about the decision-making process. And he also talks about why he does comics. He's like, I could be making way more money either doing like storyboarding for films or in video games. He's like, but the problem is like, you're just a really small cog in this big machine. He's like, whereas comics, he's like, I'm a very big cog and it's great. It's like me and the writer. And then, with colorists and inkers, and we're the guys, we're the big cogs in this machine. And kind of that's the reason why he likes comics.
That's so rad.
It goes to show that's why, when we talked about earlier, why comics is such a unique medium. That's, there it is.
Yeah, you can be
very, very specific creator voice in what's happening in there. That's rad.
Yeah. Like an artist, you're the director of photography, you're the cameraman. You're the storyboarder. You're like, you're dealing with like a writer, but like you're everything.
Yeah. You're the costume designer, makeup artist,
PA.
You're the key grip.
Mm-hmm.
Best boy.
Yeah. You should definitely check it out, Ryan. I know you're a Frank Quitely fan like myself. And you also do a little bit of art yourself. So it's just interesting to see his process and how he does it.
Learn from the master.
Right on. Ryan, I have a question for you.
What's up?
What's your pick of the week, man?
Well, this might surprise you, because I think it was a couple weeks ago I was actually complaining about Zero Year, but Batman 29 came out this week. Liked it. It's an expensive price tag. $4.99 for a comic? Oh, my God. But it was good. I actually liked it. Big, I actually progressed Zero Year a little bit more. I've been, haven't really been really too stoked with the storyline altogether, but this issue made me go, hey, this is a good issue. It really ramps up the action and the drama, and it kind of sets the stage for what's next. I still want this storyline to end, but I really dug this issue. It was good. Batman and the Bat Blimp. That's all I'm going to say, man. Like I say, Zero Year Batman had some crazy ideas. The Bat Blimp.
Is that like Steampunk Batman or something?
It's Batman gets a blimp.
Batman's all about that alliteration.
And Alfred's like, what are you doing, man? Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I dug it. Also, I'm going to have to give another pick of the week for True Detective. Show ended.
Oh.
It wrapped up, and it was amazing.
We forgot to talk about True Detective.
Still got time. Just, Evan, give your pick of the week, and we'll talk about True Detective.
My pick of the week is Dark Souls 2. It's really good. I already talked about it. Ready to go.
So the ending Are we going to talk about spoilers?
How about no?
Okay, well then
the show's too good to spoil.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't, unless you want to do like a separate thing.
We'll put it at the end of the show. We'll go close out the show, and then at the end, if you want to listen to spoilers, then you can listen on.
Okay.
So Ryan, close out the show so we can talk about True Detective.
That's going to wrap up this episode. Make sure you go to www.indestructibleart.com for our latest articles and videos. In fact, Spencer has a new article up right now that I suggest you read. Pretty good. Like us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/indestructibleart. And while you're there, please leave us a comment or a question, and we will answer it on the show. Also, if you haven't already, please rate the show on iTunes. Hit us up on Twitter, Pixels the Panels. That would be awesome. Anyways, we know you got lots of podcasts to listen to, but you listen to ours. And that makes you indestructible. So if you want to be spoiled, after the ending theme here, we're going to talk about True Detective, right?
Right.
Word.
All right. Catch you on the flip side, dudes and duders and bros and ladies, grandparents, aunt and uncles, loved ones.
Again, if you don't want to hear spoilers about the last episode of True Detective, stop listening now. But the ending of that show was super dumb.
You're super dumb because the ending was fantastic and it brought
what?
All
so
these
okay, because so Cole's, you know, because what's his name is such a Jesus Bible thumper guy. The end it has to be Cole, who's a thinker, blah blah blah, the whole time through the show. Turns out like, oh, I found Jesus. I almost died,
whoa,
so now I found
whoa,
Jesus.
Whoa. He didn't say he found hey. Jesus. He didn't say hey, that.
Yeah. Come on, man.
He just said, like, hey, in the darkness, I found a little bit of light. And, like, it gave him a reason to live. Because I felt that towards the end, the whole entire sequence when they're
no,
at the,
he
the,
it didn't give him a reason to live. He wanted to die to go to heaven to hang out with his daughter.
Yeah, but
at the end, so now
yeah,
it's like,
now
oh,
back,
I found
like,
the light.
Yeah. He didn't find Jesus. You know, all of a sudden, started saying, well, you know, John 3:16, Marty said that God. He wasn't busting stuff out like that. I just felt like, hey, I was surprised he didn't die. I really thought that was Ansville.
I thought so too.
And how creepy and thought, was it?
Would it have been better if he died?
No, because I think that would have been easy. That would have been easy out.
I like the fact that you kind of get this guy who's been a bit of this pessimist, you know, very straightforward, you know, nihilist, crazy kind of dude, have a little bit of hope. Who hasn't had any. And that was the part. It was a little bit of redemption for his character, going through everything, being so obsessed with, you know, the journey and like the debt that they have to fulfill. And then he finally gets there and he's like, you know, and the dude almost dies and I guess you'd say this like near death experience. And just, I don't know. Just this realization that I just think it's just like mortality and him coming finally to that point. Like the thing he always wants is like to kind of die. And then he finally gets there and he's like, it's not like I kind of want to live, even though
it kind of sucks. You guys.
Yeah.
I thought you should know.
The whole time he's sitting there, in, you know, naked in his wheelchair talking about like he should not be here. He wanted to be back in the darkness with his what I'm like. He doesn't want to come out of there alive.
No, it's just
he's kind of bummed out that
he
came out alive.
He felt something and that gave him hope to live. That's what I got from it. It's like
I don't feel that way. I mean, I see it kind of the same way that you guys do. And there's definitely allusions to like him saying essentially when Marty asks Russ, like, hey, why'd you come back? He's like, well, I got some other thing I have to do. Just implying that he's probably going to commit suicide after he figures all this stuff out and like, you know, pays his debts or whatever. And so like, yeah, he definitely wants to die. And he says like, yeah, when I was laying there in the darkness, all I had to do was let go. And I did, like, I tried to die, but then, you know, they kind of have that saying at the end where it seemed a little bit out of place to me, but then it really makes sense where they're looking up at the stars and he's like, yeah, there's a lot of darkness out there. And then like his reason to live isn't because like he found some new meaning in being close again to his daughter. It's because like there's all this jacked up stuff out there still, and you know, there's not a lot of light, and the people that are the light are kind of like responsible for you know, taking care, like the
yeah,
good
versus
evil.
Yeah, so now he has to go out and spread the gospel. Yeah.
No, well, I didn't get it.
I wouldn't say it's the
gospel,
but... You
guys are out of your goddamn mind, dude.
He has to go out and bust more bad guys.
Yeah, no, I didn't get that either. No. I didn't get the, like, oh, I got there's still more
murders out there.
No,
dude, he's done. Yeah, like, he's no longer a cop. Like, he's done with all that. He got the bad guy, or they, you know, they found the guy and got him at the end, and that
Wait, really?
Right there is the redemption, you know? Like, he came back and found the dude, made sure the guy wasn't there to get the other bad guys. Like, he's bummed out that the other guys got away, like, the bigger...
Right.
Like, you know, sheriff dude or whatever got away, but they got their guy, you know, he came back and did what he was supposed to do. And now he's done with that.
Okay.
But you really think he's done? Like the dude is obsessed. Like he can't, he's not going to let it lie. I mean, I wouldn't imagine, and I know they're not going to make a direct sequel or whatever, but like, he just doesn't seem like the type of character that's going to let that stuff lie. And that whole like darkness versus light stuff towards the end, it's like kind of, they're kind of just saying like, oh yeah, well,
okay, listen,
yeah,
listen,
somebody's got to be out there.
He's talking about Jesus. Hey, man, he found Jesus.
Would you guys shut You're up crazy. For 2 seconds? Stop talking about what ifs. Okay, talking right. about how, sure. how awesome the not just the entire series, but that last episode, the buildup when they get to the house, when they go through the whole Carcosa, like the where it just looks like the wilderness kind of took over inside that that weird,
well, no,
like,
all of the little
that
monuments
at.
That he bought, like,
yeah, that, I mean,
it's the
me,
dudes
that was so creepy and beautiful.
Oh,
and
yeah.
awesome. Like I then seeing the throne to the Yellow King and seeing the dead bodies laid out, why Russ and Marty are like running through those caverns. Holy shit, dudes.
And that guy, man, what a great, like, I've seen that actor in other things. Like, he's in Boardwalk Empire and he's in a bunch of stuff, but man, like, what a great, just super demented bad guy that guy ended up being, you know, like when he's going through and doing the British accent and having all these like really like eloquent dialogue with his sister, right?
His mom.
Yeah.
Mom.
No, it's like his half sister. I thought.
I thought sister,
mother.
I was getting like mom vibe.
I thought that they said like, oh yeah, he lives with his half sister.
Yeah, I think they said sister because the two of them grew up together and didn't have any like, they didn't have any adults, so they're kind of still kids. You know, they're kids living out doing whatever the heck they want.
But then there was his dad laid out in the bed. That was
Oh, yeah, and that part was weird. But, like, man, yeah, that guy, the actor, so good. Such a good portrayal of, like, just crazy dementia.
Yeah,
but
talk about
that
scene.
And then after that, they go to the hospital, and they have, like, the worst acted scene between the two of them in the entire series.
Oh, goddammit, Omar. Really?
Yes.
There's that scene when Marty's laying in the bed, right, and his ex-wife and his kids come to see him.
No, not that scene. I'm talking about when they're outside.
No, hold on, I'm getting to that. And they ask him if he's all right.
Worst conversation we've had on this fucking podcast, man.
And he goes,
calm down, everybody.
He goes,
take it down a notch.
You go, you're all right. He's like, yeah. And then he just starts bawling. And then he sees Russ. And man, I just saw these two guys getting together that were never really close, but they found something. And I enjoyed it. I'm glad it didn't go out with someone dying or they both die. I just liked it was just this, you know, grizzled detective story between these two guys and reconnecting after all these years. And I thought that the last bit of dialogue that they had when they were outside was beautiful and poignant. And I thought it wrapped the series up well. Where I'm like, hey, that's an ending. So if you didn't like it, then you are just an asshole. So
I you know, you can definitely look at it as, you know, he found God or whatever. You know, I just kind of saw it as, here's this dude that was always kind of dark and very stuck in his head, you know, based upon his outlook on life, which has a lot to do with how he was raised and then what happened with, you know, his first marriage and losing his daughter. And I just kind of saw him like he went through this horrible ordeal and then kind of just came out with like a little bit of a glimpse of optimism that the character never really exhibited. And it was nice to kind of see a progression, to see this guy kind of come out from this real crazy ordeal. And sure, it gets a little like, oh, near-death experience. And, you know, like, yeah, I see why you look at that as like, oh, he found Jesus, so lame. And I just kind of look at it like, no, the guy just came really close to death and realized all the kind of bullshit been saying about how we're all destined to die, mankind should walk together hand in hand towards extinction. Like, he just is kind of like, the dude got older a little bit and matured, because
those you could look at it like those statements he makes about things, about walking hand in hand towards extinction, like those are kind of, those are like immature thoughts you have as a teenager when everything's like, you know, like that's kind of an immaturity on his behalf a little bit, and he kind of grows out of it, and it's all because he just got so close to like death's door and like, and just going through such a crazy thing, and the whole experience of like tying everything up and finally solving the murder and getting the Yellow King. Like I just saw like he came out just transformed a little bit, and I also liked seeing the guy who was always kind of like the miserable SOB kind of being like, hey, like making the real, like even when he's kind of saying like there is good in the world, like we're the light, he's saying, me, you and Marty, we're the light. And he, as Ryan says, it's very poignant, and it's very like, even when he like he's such a well-spoken guy, and like his character just, like I said, it was a progression, and it was a nice progression, especially if there's so many dark things happening in the series itself, to kind of end with a little bit of like, hey man, like raise you up a little bit. It's okay. We are winning. We are the light.
Yeah. It made me feel good about myself and like life.
It was an interesting transition, or like a character growth for the character, for both of them. And it was kind of a very subtle thing. And I totally could see how you could be like, oh, he found Jesus, whatever. I don't see that. I don't see them all of a sudden going to be like a Bible thumper. Like, he knows like religion is complete BS. I think that was more of like, it's like when people say they're spiritual. I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Like, I could see him being, you know, like the character potentially progressing to that, you know, in some what if scenario. But I just saw him being like, there is good stuff going on, and maybe there is something else, there is another thing after, like it is not all just this bullshit thing that I've been spouting where I sound like fucking Nietzsche. It's just him being like, hey man, the world ain't so bad.
And I would have been stoked on something like that, you know, like that I totally agree with, like that it seems like a good like culmination of the entire series in one character. But I just don't think that's what they did. I feel like that last scene totally like threw all of that stuff out the window. Like, it took all the things that he was leading up to and becoming like, you know, a more optimistic but like well-rounded, all this stuff, and kind of was like, oh man, I, you know, I saw heaven, I saw my kid, and now I'm gonna go, let's, you know, it's all about God versus the devil kind of thing, light versus dark, all that kind of stuff. It just seemed a cheesy way to end a crazy series.
I'm gonna have to strongly disagree with you, Omar, without calling you names.
Yeah, I could see how you'd be maybe disappointed or feeling like if that is the actual, like if that's, you know, that's your interpretation, and I could see how that interpretation would make you feel a little bit betrayed by what you were suggested to believe throughout the series as you're getting to know Russ as a character, and then it seems like he kind of like just totally flips, you know, if you go by your interpretation. And there is a lot of religious context in which like dark versus evil exists, you know, not just in monotheism or like Catholicism, like it does span through other religion and spiritual texts and stuff. So I didn't necessarily see it as like him believing in God or whatever. And I didn't necessarily see him like looking up and like when he's laying back in Carcosa and he sees the spiral, like I didn't see that as like him seeing the heavens or whatever. That to me, that was like him seeing like the universe as it, like as all things are connected, like more of like a, which probably has more like of a Buddhist spin on it than a Christian one, you know, because if you're looking at heaven or whatever, you're not going to see like stars spinning around. Like, you would assume the imagery for that is like clouds and like pearly gates or whatever. So yeah, I didn't necessarily get the flip over to him just like being all super religious now. But going back to that scene where they're running around, you know, going through that lair, Lynn was actually like running around the house, just being like, I can't watch this. This is too stressful. It was kind of nuts.
Yeah, I was sitting there going, this is really funny. The pacing was really well done. I mean, the cinematography.
That location, man, that's crazy. That was a crazy spot they found to do all that stuff in.
Yeah, I love the way it ended with just kind of was these aerial shots of all the locales that they visited throughout the years. It just ended on this very, you know.
Super creepy.
Yeah. Man, it was, I mean, that show just start to finish. I've been recommending it to anybody I talk to because, you know, it's good that these shows exist. Because, I mean, TV is bad. Like, there's a lot of bad stuff on TV. And, like, when there's something this great, like, I think everybody, you know, should watch it. Like, people with brains. I don't want dumb people watching this because dumb people wouldn't understand.
It's just crazy to me, like, how you can have so much buildup and so much anticipation for a show. And like, I guess one of the other things that for me, like, I'm trying to look at it outside myself is, like, because I was so into it, anything they would have done at the end would have been disappointing because it was, like, an ending to a thing that I was really, really excited about and had a lot of anticipation for.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's hard. Like, you know, they came pretty damn close to making it, like, you know, start to finish something that was super awesome, even with the fervor of excitement that happened, you know, like the over anticipation. Like, you talk about video games and stuff, like things that don't come out for a while, people, like Titanfall, like everyone's talking about, this is going to be it, this is going to sell the thing, this is going to be the greatest game ever made, and then it comes out and it doesn't, it's very hard to deliver on that kind
of expectation.
Yeah, it doesn't quite meet it,
but it's,
well,
like,
it's right it, even there, if it yeah. was, even if it's great, it's so overhyped, you know, like just that much fervor for something is, you can never deliver on something right. that people have put made up in their head that big. And they did a pretty damn good job of keeping my excitement, like, alive the whole way through, you know, and delivering. And again, like, I liked the entire thing except for the very last scene outside. Like, that's the only part of that show that I didn't enjoy.
Have you been reading other interpretations of it anywhere else, Omar? I'm just curious.
No, I haven't read anything.
There was an interview with on BuzzFeed with Nick Pizzolatto, the writer.
Yeah,
I think it came out either like a week or two before the last episode, and he basically said something to the fact, he's like, some people, it is so hyped up and they're so caught up in it that they're not going to be happy unless, like, something short of Cole walking out of the television and shooting you in the face. Like, they just, like, there's nothing you could do. Like, it's so hyped and it's so,
yeah,
you know, and they acknowledge that, but I think it was pretty good, man. It was like, it did it all. It got, you know, they got the bad guy, they got super messed up, and then they came out and they had that moment where they kind of said, and they said, look at us now that we've gone through this crazy ordeal. And like I said, there's some transformation, some character.
Yeah. You get a little bit of reflection, and you don't always get that with, you know, stuff that ends like that or something that's that involved, you know.
When you guys were watching it on HBO Go and stuff, did you get to watch the little interviews at the end of every episode, or was that?
Yeah, they're in there.
Okay. I was just wondering, because I was watching it on demand, on like the cable company's on demand and not HBO Go. And I was just wondering if that was only there or something.
Yeah, they throw them in there.
So that stuff is there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, besides it being, you know, this rad show, it was done only 8 episodes. I mean, and there was no fat to it. Every sense, you know, or every scene made sense and was part of the overall narrative that they're trying to tell. And what was it? The ending of the 4th episode, which is the 6-minute long no cut scene.
Yeah, single shot.
That's like the greatest thing I've seen on television, like on a TV show, do. Like, TV shows don't do that, and to have that level of sophistication for a show like that was.
You know, that's HBO for you, man. They're,
well, the thing is, I remember watching
it's
it.
It's not TV. It's HBO. Man.
Watching it, like, 2 minutes in, I'm like, holy crap, they haven't cut yet. Like, this is amazing. And I know how much work goes into, you know, doing a shot like that. Not that I've ever worked on a movie, but I know it's, you know, very tedious and labor-intensive and to get everybody, you know, on the right marks. But to do it for a full 6 minutes with the amount of crazy action that was going on, running from house to house where the neighborhood was, you know, erupting and the cops were showing up. That was a crazy scene, man. That was one of the coolest things I've seen on TV.
That's the director. He's famous for doing that. There's like Jane. He directed Jane
Children
Eyre.
Of Men or whatever. Is the
only
other?
No, he's not.
He
the
didn't
director.
Do
the
yeah.
I just said that because the other. That's the only other like single shot that I remember. It, what,
there's one of that. There's a single shot like that in Firefly. That's the movie version of. Or Serenity, whatever the movie
Serenity.
Version of. Yeah, there's Serenity. A single shot in the beginning where, like, the commander's, like, running around up and downstairs in the ship, which is really good. But no, it's like Cary Nakugaga, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He's, like, that's his deal. Like, he's done. He did Jane Eyre. There's some single shot. Like, I don't remember exactly what it is, but, like, that's, like, one of his signature moves.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because Martin Scorsese did it famously in Goodfellas.
Right.
And then, you know, Quentin Tarantino did this homage to Martin Scorsese with, I forgot what film it was. And then I think Favreau did it in Swingers, like, but to see it on TV.
Well, you can go back as far as, like, Hitchcock used to do stuff like that. Not as long, but he would do things where he knew that if you broke the scenes up, that it put breaks in the suspense and the action that was building up. So he had sets specifically built that would fall away from behind the camera so the camera could keep shooting as these guys would move across different sets.
Yeah, that's stuff right.
like
that.
Yeah, like Hitchcock was, and you think about,
nut, yeah,
yeah, and like back then they had the cameras they had were like, you know, buildings on like train tracks that they had to move around, and he was doing right. stuff like that with it. That's crazy.
That's cool stuff, man. So yeah,
did you hear that Michael Bay is gonna be doing the remake of Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds?
Uh oh,
great. Are they gonna be little robot birds flying around?
I hope so.
The camera's never gonna stop moving. This big old like patriotic theme, and like at one point like, the birds will be crashing down and be like an American flag, and like Josh Hartnett will show up, and like there'll be like this like steady cam that's like you know looking out towards the sky, and it'll be slow motion fireworks.
It's gonna be great.
Optimus Prime shows up.
So yeah, tell us what you think of True Detective. Let us know. I think I'm right. I think Omar's wrong. Or do you think Omar's right and I'm wrong? That it's amazing and the ending was fantastic. Because, I don't know, we need more shows like True Detective, guys, because
We need no shows that have a start and end. Like, that's the best thing about, you know, a cheesy example is anime. Like, I used to watch a ton of anime, and all the story arcs have, like, you know, there's, like, 20 episodes or 26 episodes in this arc, and it has a start, it has an end, and that way you can build a proper story inside that. You're not just, like, you know, stretching, stretch, like American TV. It's just, man... And I'm glad it ended because it could have done a Deadwood thing and then gotten cut off in halfway through, you know, the season 4 or something.
Yeah, yeah. That had a terrible ending.
Now we can have some mindless speculation about season 2. And Oprah Winfrey. I'm telling you, man. Oprah. I was thinking more about
be in it, I heard.
Because I heard they want to go with like a strong, you know, maybe female presence this time around, right? So you have Jean Garofalo and Oprah Winfrey, Mean Streets of L.A.
Jeez.
That would be awesome, dude. I mean, jeez.
I mean, Oprah might be cool, but Janine Garofalo, really?
Yeah, Janine Garofalo.
Well, yeah, you have to like the one character and hate the other one.
I guess.
It's, yeah.
Or vice versa. And then who else could we throw in there?
Probably Bill Cosby.
There you go.
Jim Carrey.
There you go.
Tina Fey.
Yes.
Carrot Top.
Malcolm Jamal Warner. You know who that guy is?
Is that Urkel?
You flipping jerks, man. Theo. Theo Huxley.
All right, that's going to do it.
Thanks for listening. Omar's wrong.
I agree with that statement.
Omar, do you agree with that statement?
No, obviously not.
Then you're a liar.
Oh, you're right. You turned me. Just now, you turned me. I'm good.
Cool. Thanks.